but simultaneously he's beset by memories. Independently of him, his mind has started filling in the Hallie-shaped blanks. He'll be reading in the kitchen in the small hours, and realize that he is waiting for her to come through the door, can almost see her, in her pajamas, rubbing her eyes and asking him what he's doing, forgetting to listen to the answer as she gets sucked into an investigation of the contents of the fridge. At the cooker, scrambling eggs, crossing the living room to straddle him as he watches TV, lost in some corporate website with a cigarette and a dogged expression, brushing her teeth in the mirror while he shaves. Soon the house is haunted by 1,000 different ghosts of her, with 1,000,000 infinitesimal details in attendance, things he'd never noticed himself noticing. They don't come with an agenda or an emotional soundtrack. They don't pluck at his heartstrings or elicit any reaction that he can identify definitively as love or loss. They are simply there, profusely and exhaustingly there. Farley says the whole thing reminds him of a joke.
That's great, Farley. That's exactly what I need.
I can't help what it reminds me of, can I? Now, do you want to hear it or not?
Howard makes a gesture of resignation.
Okay, then. Man walks into a bar and sees a guy sitting 2 stools down, has the smallest head he's ever seen. Body's perfectly normal, but his head is no bigger than a cue ball. He tries not to stare, but after a few minutes he can't stand it any longer. So he goes down to the guy and says, "Look, I'm sorry if this seems rude, but would you mind telling me what happened to your head?" The tiny-headed guy in this little tinny high-pitched voice tells him that many years ago, back in the Second World War, he'd served in the Navy. "My ship got torpedoed and every one of my shipmates drowned," he says. "I should have drowned too. Only as I sank to the bottom, I felt hands around me, pulling me upwards. When I came to, I was lying on a rock in the middle of the ocean, being given mouth to mouth by a beautiful mermaid. I realized she'd saved my life and I asked her how I could repay her. She said she didn't want anything. "There must be something I can do for you," I said. "No," she said. But she was so moved by my gratitude that she decided to give me 3 wishes. Well, all I really wanted was to be back home, out of the damn war. I told her and she snapped her fingers and next thing you know, we're just off the shore and I can see my own house waiting for me. "What next?" she said. "You've done so much for me, it's hard to ask for anything more," I said. "But maybe some cash, just enough to tide me over?" She snapped her fingers and suddenly my pockets were spilling over with money. "Done," she says. "You will never want again. And for your 3rd wish?" "Well, I thought long and hard," says the soldier, as I floated there beside her. Finally, I said, "I don't want to seem forward, but not only have you saved my life, brought me home from the war, and made me rich beyond my wildest dreams, you're the most beautiful creature I've ever laid eyes on. I know you're going to return to the ocean, and I'm going back to the land, and we're never going to see each other again. But before that happens, what I would like more than anything else in the world is just once to make love to you. That's my 3rd and final wish." The mermaid looked sad. "I'm afraid that is the one wish I cannot grant," she said. "For I am a mermaid, and you are a man, and to know each other carnally is impossible." "Really?" I said. She nodded regretfully. I thought about it for a moment. "Okay," I said. "How about a little head?"
A few seconds elapse before Howard realizes he's finished.
"That's it?"
he demands.
"So I'm like the idiot with the tiny head, is that it?"
"It reminded me, that's all,"
Farley protests.
"Because, you know, be careful what you wish for."
"I didn't wish for this, did I? I didn't wish for Aurelie McIntyre to have a fiancé and hang me out to dry. Why the fuck would I wish for that?"
"I don't know, Howard. Why would you?"
Now the door opens, and Howard slouches down behind his newspaper as Tom hefts himself in. Every November, when the anniversary of the accident in the quarry comes round, a gloom descends over the coach. This year, more than ever before, it seems Howard can sense his rage mounting, cracks appearing in the noble sportsmanlike facade, until it's as if he is inside Tom's mind, sharing that furious urge to launch his wrecked body at Howard and beat him until Howard is as mangled as he is. Sometimes he wishes he'd do it, get it over with.
"How's Tom?"
Farley hails him. The coach grunts as he passes the sofa, heads for his pigeonhole.
Something on your mind?
Farley asks innocently, as Howard's stomach does somersaults.
Busy day.
Tom returns unwillingly.
Trying to finalize the arrangements for the swimming trip. 10 boys. Nearest hotel only has 4 rooms.
Pile them all into bed with you,
Farley suggests.
Keep you all warm on these cold winter nights.
That's hilarious,
Tom says tonelessly.
That's very, very funny.
Envelopes tucked into his back pocket, he limps out through the door again.
Someday,
Howard says, lowering the paper again,
that guy is going to snap. And I'm the one he's going to snap at.
Howard, I swear to God, you've got an imagination like Stephen King.
Then why has he been looking at me all week, like for 2 pins he'd disembowel me?
Because you're a paranoid man with too much time in your hands. Too much time in a tiny, tiny little head.
On Thursday morning, the program for the concert goes up on the notice board. The Van Doren Quartet are there, to Jeekers' inordinate relief. He peels away, wiping the sweat from his brow.
Did we get in?
Owen, MC's executioner Flynn, asks anxiously, stuck at the back of the crowd, examining the board. Patrick Danalage Noonan scans the list again, then, scowling, turns away.
No.
We didn't!
Owen is shocked.
What did you expect, man?
Patrick throws up his hands at him.
Take a look at the programme. It's wall-to-wall whitey.
Hey, Skip, what's that chit with your name on it?
What's what? Even standing on tiptoes, Skippy still can't see the board.
Hold on.
Jeff reaches over the collected heads and passes back to Skippy a miniature white envelope with the school crest on it. I'm being sent for guidance counselling. Skippy studies the card. With Father Foley. At the name, hands are cupped and brought to ears.
Father who?
What's that?
Speak up there, young man.
Why are they sending me for counselling?
They found you out, Skippy.
Dennis taunts, wiggling his fingers in his face.
They know.
Could be they suspect about Connor.
Ruprecht frowns.
Skippy, if anyone asks, I was with you all night helping you with your maths. Keep calm. They can't prove anything.
Can't they? All through German class, his worry mounts. Have they found out about him and Laurie? Maybe they don't like people having girlfriends. He sends her a text just to say hi, but she doesn't reply.
Nicht makes a verb negative,
the teacher says.
Ich brauche nicht. I do not need. Ich liebe nicht. I do not love. Let's look at the textbook. Was hast du heute nicht gekauft, Uwe? Ich habe ein Schnitzel für meine Mutter nicht gekauft. What did you not buy today, Uwe? I did not buy a schnitzel for my mother.
I've got a schnitzel for his mother.
Mario, your schnitzel wouldn't feed a mouse.
I do not go. I do not eat. I do not see. I do not hear. He raises his hand, presents the chit to be excused. Father Ignatius Foley sits with a pen braced horizontally between his index fingertips, contemplating the youth bunched on the other side of his desk. After protracted and unpleasant ear surgery, he has returned from convalescence to find a stack of emergency cases awaiting his attention. And this lad is top of the heap. A pale fellow of slight build, he looks like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. In his file, however, you will find attitudinal problems, inattention, disruptive tendencies, vomiting in class, and playing frisbee alone. Trouble comes in every shape and size. When you've been counseling youngsters for as long as Ignatius Foley, you'll know that.
Do you know why you're here, boy?
Father Foley gives him the full benefit of his stentorian baritone voice. The boy shrinks a bit, stares at his thumbs, mumbles something. Father Foley's eyes narrow. He knows, all right. There's a wiliness beneath that guileless countenance. The look of someone who'll try and wriggle around the rules. Well, he won't find much wriggle room in here. But first, the folded hands, the kindly avuncular smile, put him at his ease.
Don't be alarmed, Daniel. No one's out to get you. Your acting principal has simply noticed a dip in your grades recently and asked me to take a look to see if I can help.
Father Foley rises from his chair.
Now, why don't you tell me, in your own words, why you think your grades have gone down?
As the boy launches into the usual prevaricatory flim-flam, Father Foley, slowly circumnavigating the room, peers into the file again. The case is somewhat unusual. This boy does not seem one of the baffled imbeciles that typically washes up in his office. His marks are excellent, or rather were excellent, until quite recently. You could almost pinpoint the day they began their steep decline. Father Foley's got a hunch, and when you've been in this business for as long as he has, you learn to trust your hunches.
Drugs!
Spinning around, he jabs a finger in the boy's face, who, caught off guard, jumps in his seat.
I want you to look at me,
Father Foley commands.
And tell me if you've encountered any of the following substances.
The boy nods timorously. Father Foley reads from the Department of Education leaflet.
Cannabis, also known as ganja, hash joints.
He peers at the boy. Nothing.
Marijuana, grass, weed, Mary Jane.
No.
Speed, whiz, billy whiz, crank, ketamine, Special K.
What in God's name is Special K doing here?
Cocaine, coke, Charlie, snort, blow. Heroin, horse, shit, junk. China White, the White Lady.
If there were something there, Father Foley would find it, be it merely a twitch, a blink, a bead of sweat that gave the game away. This boy has no reaction to any of the drugs on the checklist. Still, Father Foley has the distinct sense that he is withholding something. But what? Returning to his desk, casting about the room for inspiration, he lights on a framed picture from his missionary days. His younger self on an airstrip in the desert, intrepid, golden-locked, with his arm around a black whose name he forgets. That plane in the background, Father Foley had actually flown. The pilot letting him take the joystick as they soared over the mountains with their vital consignment of Bibles. He smiles fondly at his handsome avatar, and then his eyes shift from the picture to the cotton buds next to it, and his smile fades as he is swamped by unpleasant memories of the last 2 weeks, being poked and prodded by little Oriental nurses, yapping to each other in whatever it was. Poke! Poke! Do they think everybody's ears are the same? Can they not appreciate that some men have unusually complicated ear structures? But then his eyes flick back to the plane, flying. This business of the lone frisbee plane. It had left Father Foley with a bad taste in his mouth when he first encountered it in the report. Now he thinks he knows why, coughing gruffly.
Tell me, Daniel, have you begun to feel anything lately?
He sees the boy's lips, after a moment of deliberation, begin to move. Did he say thoughts? It sounded like he said something about thoughts. Well, well. The pieces begin to fall into place. The disappeared ambition, the blank stare, the sociopathic attitude, the constant twitching. Puberty, we meet again.
Daniel, you have entered that stage of life when you leave childish things behind and enter manhood. This can be a bewildering experience, what with changes in your body, hair appearing in unexpected places, growth spurts, and so forth. Adult sexuality, while one of the most precious gifts bestowed upon us by our Maker, brings with it great responsibility. For, when abused, it can plunge a man into mortal danger. I am speaking of impure acts. These acts may present themselves at first quite innocently, something to fill an idle moment, perhaps introduced to you by a friend, but believe you me, there is nothing innocent about them. It is a slippery slope. A slippery slope indeed. I have seen good upstanding men brought to their knees by these disgusting activities. Not merely falling great. I am speaking of shame, disgrace, exile. Decent families' names blackened for generations. Most deadly of all, the risk to your immortal soul.